This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, good morning. Thanks for joining us here on SB Nation AM. Tony D alongside Ron Culver. So a lot of training camp opened up yesterday around the NFL. And boy, you can pair and contrast that to what's going on in Major League Baseball, especially in the American League. You get these great feelings of optimism. Training camp is opening in the NFL, right? If we can just get the running game working, or our quarterback stays healthy, or our defense plays better than last year, or maybe the draft pick, it turns out to be a stud. All of the optimism that comes out in the beginning of training camp for NFL fans is real, right? Is real. You can turn things around quickly. You can feel like there's optimism. You can think that maybe you're a third-place team in your division, but heck, if an injury happens to the star quarterback of the team that's going to win, you've got a shot. But baseball, the American League is pretty much set. It's going to be Boston. It's going to be the Yankees. It's going to be the Astros. It's going to be the Indians. The only question now is like Seattle and Oakland, and the A's are on the rise. And everybody in the American League, a lot of teams in the American League have gone into this season with the idea of tanking. We're going to get into that a little bit later on today, whether Rob Manfred should do anything about it or should he leave the business of baseball alone. Because sometimes it works. You're talking about the Houston Astros last year. They did it right. They went through a series of time where they were a bad baseball team. They stripped themselves of bad contracts, got some young prospects, developed that talent, and turned it into a World Series championship, added better pieces to it in free agency and trades. And guess what? They're a world championship team that's looking good for a couple of years down the line. And if you can sell that to your fan base, it's worth doing. But if you can't sell it to your fan base, if you're just doing it to strip payroll, or you're doing it because that's just how you do business in your market, that's hard to sell. But the NFL doesn't have to do that. It doesn't matter whether the NFL is located in Green Bay or New York City or Los Angeles. There's so much optimism around everything, because you never know how this short 16-game season is going to play out. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the start of training camp, some news and notes around that, and what's going on with Julio Jones and the Atlanta Falcons. We've got all of that coming up in this hour. I am Tony D. This is SB Nation AM.
Kane is in the building.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Yeah, I really never cared about when people said the ratings for NFL was down and people's interest in the sport was down and this anthem thing was going to be the death knell of the league. I never bought it. I knew that when we got to a point where training camp was going to hit, that's where all the attention was going to be. People still love this. They're excited about the upcoming season. It was nonsense. It was just a story. People are going nuts because their teams have potential this season. I mean, look at what people in New York are saying. I mean, I go to the New York papers a lot, and the Giants get Saquon Barkley. They're crazy about Saquon Barkley. They went 3-13 last season. They got a ramped up offensive line, and they got a running back now that they love. It's just, there's, who knows what the Giants are going to do? Giants can go 5-11, but it doesn't matter because you went 3-13, fixed some things, and now there's optimism that they could win the division. Okay, I'll get to this Atlanta Falcons story, because there's new reports now that Julio Jones is going to report to camp today. Now, he was going to hold out because he wanted to change his contract. He's looking for a new deal. He's missed all the mandatory offseason stuff this year, and he was going to hold out, and it looks like they're coming to terms. Now, here's the situation with Julio Jones. When he signed a five-year deal, contract extension, it was very front-loaded, so he's making a lot of money on the front end. And as it got to the latter part of his contract, he has 3 years remaining on the deal, All of a sudden, the numbers that he was going to get paid do not fit with where he is in terms of the elite wide receivers in the NFL. He's one of the top receivers in the league, but he was being paid like the eighth, ninth highest receiver in the league. Now, that's not sitting well with him, of course, even though his deal is front-loaded, even though the Falcons have said, you know what, it's still a fair financial deal given what that was two years ago, when you signed the deal. And the Falcons are in this weird position because they don't want to set a precedent by negotiating or renegotiating with the player that has 3 years left on their contract. Plus, they don't want the money to go to Julio Jones, per se, when they have other things they want to fill. Remember, they just came off 2 years ago playing in the Super Bowl. They were into playoffs last year. They're anticipating to go to the playoffs again. So they need Julio Jones, but they also need help in other areas. But Jones doesn't want to be paid like the ninth best wide receiver in the league. He isn't the ninth best wide receiver in the league. He's one of the top wide receivers in the league. And he's very valuable to what they do offensively. He knows that. The Falcons know that. But the business side of it is preventing Atlanta from completely renegotiating with them. That would set a bad precedent. Because deals have to somewhat be honored. I mean, you can renegotiate or you can touch it up with incentives or you can do something to it. But you create a deal and you look down the future and you project your cap down the road and you're anticipating that the player is going to honor that deal or maybe just slightly adjust it. And Jones wants a new deal to be paid as one of the top receivers in the game, which he is. But his contract doesn't allow him to be paid as one of the top receivers in the league because it doesn't. So the Falcons don't want to set a precedent. Julio Jones doesn't want to play at that kind of money. I get it. And so there was a threat that Jones was going to hold out on his contract, not report to Flowery Branch for the start of practice today. But general manager Tom Dimitroff says that late last night that Jones will be reporting to camp and they are going to revise and adjust some of the numbers as best they can for the 2018 season. So I don't think this is a complete renegotiation by the Falcons, but it does prevent Julio Jones from holding out. He's going to end up reporting to camp, which is very important. That's the thing, is that when you get to camp and there's this business side of sports that the players appreciate, but there's also that emotional side of sports of we want to win, we want everybody here, we're all on the same page, we're a team. And that's why locker rooms, that people always say like, well, will this cause a problem in the locker room? Not if it benefits guys down the road, it doesn't. If it benefits guys down the road, they'll love it. So if Julio Jones can get the Falcons, for example, to renegotiate with 3 years left on his deal, that means the offensive tackle can renegotiate with 3 years left on his deal, that he can at least ask or he can push for it. And anybody else that wants to do that can push for it. So NFL locker rooms are very weird like that. If the player is liked and well-respected, then holdouts are usually reciprocal, meaning they'll like and respect that because they know that in the end it's a business. They know that in the end, if he's setting a certain bar for certain players or he's doing something for himself that benefits them in their negotiations, great. Sometimes holdouts are don't get handled very well. I remember in Denver, there were a few that, you know, players weren't too thrilled about, but the reality of it is it depends on the situation. And in this situation, I was interested to see who was going to blink. And it looks like both of them didn't really, neither one blinked, but both of them said, before we actually do blink, let's talk about this and get this down. But you see it with like the Texans don't want to negotiate with Clowney during the season, so they're working on a deal. Now, nobody wants to do that during the season. This makes sense. So you got some players that want to get this tidied up before the camp. Tennessee, for example, where I live, the big talk is Taylor Lewan, the offensive lineman. He is going into this year playing on his fifth-year option. They don't want him to play on a fifth-year option. They don't want him to be a free agent next year. They want to lock him up. He's a good offensive lineman. He's important to Marcus Mariota. They're going to lock him up. They're working on that as soon as they can. So that's the kind of stuff that you get during training camp. But the biggest thing you get, and I mentioned this earlier, is that feeling that football is here and that the NFL has done its job with the cap, with the draft, the way it structures itself, so that no matter what your record is previously, you can get better and you can get better quickly. There's no NFL team that goes into training camp saying, well, in reality, this is going to be a shifting year for us. We're getting rid of some contracts and we're working on some young players. That happens in baseball constantly. I know when I was in Denver, I covered the Rockies, and the Rockies were a terrible baseball team. I mean, just a terrible baseball team. And the reason was is they had so many bad deals that they had to get off the books. So the Rockies were trying to get like pitcher contracts, Danny Nagel's contract and Mike Hampton's contract off the books. They were bad deals for the team, but they were paying it. They were still paying it, even though those guys were elsewhere. And so there was a lot of young talent that was being brought up to work out and be, you know, getting Major League Baseball experience, but the team wasn't very good. But if you were a diehard Rockies fan, that's what you knew. The team kind of told you that. We're not going to be good for a couple of years. This talent that's coming up is good. You can come watch them. You can come watch them, you know, the competition come in. If you want to see Barry Bonds, if you want to see other stars come into Coors Field, great. But as far as our team goes, we've got some business that we got to take care of, and it's going to affect our on-field product. And in the NFL, you can make a mess of your cap by signing the wrong players, and you can make a mess of your draft by not evaluating talent. But the NFL doesn't put you in a constraint where you're locked into being terrible and awful for years to come. That's why the Cleveland Browns are such an enigma to me, right? I mean, Bill Belichick was the coach of the Cleveland Browns, but that was the Cleveland Browns of the Baltimore Ravens, right? That was a team that was good. He made the playoffs that one year. They played the Patriots. But that team went on to become the Ravens, and that team, you know, won a Super Bowl, was good. And this 1999 Browns, that's the expansion team, has never been able to figure out how to do things right. They draft players, they don't work out. They bring in guys, they don't work out. They can't find a quarterback, right? Defensively, they may be strong. Offensively, they're terrible, or vice versa. They can't find a coach. They're impatient with coaches. But the league as a whole, it doesn't set you up to do that. There's no reason that the Browns at almost 20 years shouldn't be decent. Instead of one year, they made the playoffs. They should be good. The tools are there to be good. If you stink, we allow you to get the best players in the college draft. Everybody has the same salary cap situation. Manage your money better. But baseball can come to you at any moment, especially if you're in a small to mid-market. They can come to you at any moment and say, you know what, it's going to be lean for the next couple of years, and we'll see where it goes. And sometimes, like the Houston Astros, it works out. Where they do that, they lose 100 games, and they're you know, getting rid of bad deals and grooming talent, and then it turns into a World Series, and then you're adding like a Justin Verlander to the mix, you're adding a Garrett Cole to the mix, and it works out. You got a team that's got some longevity. It's got a little bit of a window, bigger window, to be successful and win more championships. But sometimes you're just stripping payroll in baseball because you have to strip payroll in baseball, and you're getting prospects and you're getting rid of star players, and you know it's going to be 4 or 5 years before you ever see some sort of contention in September again. So training camp to me in the NFL is a lot more than just the start of football. It's that feeling everyone goes, grabs a magazine, or they go online to look up how their team is looking and what their team is projected to do and what the competition is going to be like. It's like Frank Schwab of Yahoo Sports and I used to do, I've done radio show with him for years. And we always used to do the day the schedule would come out, and we'd always break down the Broncos schedule. And when he was a beat reporter for the Broncos, and we always used to say, this is such a holiday for NFL fans. And yet nobody really knows how this is going to shake out. Right? You would just look and say, well, that's a win, that's a loss, that's a win. But nobody is really sure, because we don't know how things are going to play out during the regular season. But it's just the excitement and the possibility that what a team that you thought was probably going to go 6-10 might actually go 10-6 and make the playoffs. And that's what training camp is. It's fun to see the players arrive in helicopters and fancy cars, or ride a bike, or do all the things that training camp sort of lends itself to do, right? Bring in the snow cone machine, or this player is buying everybody food, or whatever it is. But the thing about it is there's energy and excitement this time of year. We go through this really slow period of sports, and then it opens us up to this really wide open possibility that our team might be good. That might be destroyed 4 weeks into the season when your starting quarterback goes down with an ankle injury, or you start out 0-4 and everybody says, well, nobody who ever started 0-4 went on to win the division. But it doesn't matter today. And that's what I like about today. This was fun yesterday. Seeing all the news and just the video clips, it was exciting to me because football is back. So as I said at the top of this segment, I never once bought into the idea that football was dying, that it was dead. It comes back because as sports fans, we need this. We need it. I don't know what I would do without football in the fall. I like baseball. but my fall belongs to football. Both college and the NFL, and camp has begun. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. I want to throw out a question. If you're out there and you have a team, and you, what's your realistic goal for your team? Like, you've analyzed everything. What would make you happy? Besides winning a Super Bowl, which would make everybody happy, some of you out there have realistic goals for your team. Maybe your team is a little young. Maybe your quarterback needs a little bit more work. Maybe you're coming in with so many unknowns. But you'd be happy with 8-8 or 9-7 to show progress. Maybe you don't want to head into that twilight zone of a record. Maybe you want to back off of that and say, well, my realistic goal is 4-12 and I want to keep it that way. Or my realistic goal is Super Bowl or bust. 800-777-2907. You hit me up on Twitter at Tony D Radio. Ron Culver alongside, and this is SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you could be with us here on SB Nation AM. All right, so Ron, do you have a realistic record for your football team this year? Going in like a realistic, okay, this is what I want, this is what I expect.
Definitely a few games over 500, and I need them to make the playoffs.
All right, yeah. My team, Steelers, Super Bowl or nothing. Super Bowl or I'm done. I'm done. I lost to Jacksonville last year, man.
But see, I'm always on the flip side as well because my team's the Chargers. They have yet really to consider that next franchise-level quarterback.
Yeah, that's true.
And so, although I do want, you know, if they can get to the second round of the playoffs, I'll be happy. If they were to tank, there better be a good quarterback coming out.
Yeah.
And yeah, they need to go after that guy.
It is amazing, that quarterback position, man. It's so it's incredible to me that we don't have a bevy of good quarterbacks. And it feels like that window, that talent pool, shrinks every single year of people who actually can do this for a living, like who can really do it well. There are serviceable quarterbacks, don't get me wrong. You can always find somebody that'll get you under center and do something. But I mean the guys that are really good, that can take your team to the Super Bowl. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars outplayed the Patriots until the end of a game. I mean, I thought they outplayed them for most of the game until it counted, and that's when the Patriots kicked it into the next gear. And there's still conversations about Blake Bortles' viability because he does throw picks and sometimes doesn't manage the game well. But yet, he's one of those quarterbacks that has a place among the people that will get it done in the league. But if you don't have it, it's so hard. I mean, my son is a Cowboys fan because my brother inundated his brain. And he said, I had to explain to my son about Tony Romo. I said, look, when Tony Romo's time comes, if the Cowboys don't have another quarterback, you're going to go through really lean years, and then you got to get a quarterback. And then here comes Dak Prescott, and my son doesn't have to go through that as a fan. They just go from one quarterback to the next. They just move right along. That's the biggest worry when you have a good quarterback under center like Phillip Rivers or Ben Roethlisberger, and they leave and you know there's nobody behind them yet, or there's so many question marks of the people behind them. And then you're thinking, well, when that happens, when that player leaves, I don't know how long it's going to be if we don't have a good quarterback or we don't get a good quarterback. I mean, look, Cleveland has had good players in positions with the Browns. They just haven't had a good quarterback under center. They go through it so many times. I mean, that famous picture of all the starting quarterbacks listed on that Browns jersey, it's funny, but it's also sad. It's sad because a team should be better at that. A team should be better at evaluating that. And they're not. But it's a scary time when your NFL quarterback is getting older. Every year I keep waiting for the news that Ben Roethlisberger is going to quit. And some years I kind of want him to because I know he's gone through a hell of a career in terms of injuries. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know who Mason Rudolph is, Landry Jones. I don't know these guys if they're capable of taking the Steelers to the next level
or keeping
the machine alive.
I feel pretty safe right now knowing that Phillip Rivers I don't think is going anywhere too soon. I mean, I know his time is coming soon. But the alternative is for him to be home with his 8 kids.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's got 8 children. He's going to be playing until he's 50.
If he could.
He'll try anyway.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be home.
Yeah, exactly. You know, college ain't cheap. Got to keep rolling along with those NFL contracts.
So I'm surprised Philip Rivers goes, I'll do anything, man. I'll hold the football. I'll do whatever you need. I got to stay employed. I read somewhere where Philip Rivers, his family didn't move to Los Angeles. They're staying in San Diego, and he has a driver that takes him to practice every day back and forth.
That's not really that uncommon, though. I mean, if you had your choice, you know, having lived in both areas, I would much rather live in San Diego than in L.A.
Yeah, but when you say that's not uncommon, that happens. There are a lot of people who do that.
Well, I know of one other athlete, Steve Finley. Steve Finley lived in San Diego because he played with the Padres, played with the Astros, Diamondbacks, you know, won a World Series with Diamondbacks. When he was playing with the Angels, he stayed in San Diego and just took the train up every day.
I can see that. But how long is the train ride from San Diego to LA?
It was about an hour.
Oh, wow. Is that a fast-moving train?
No, it's like a normal, train, like Amtrak.
Because they said Philip Rivers' trip was like 2 hours.
It actually stopped at the stadium, so it made a lot of sense. Yeah, for Philip Rivers, I know where the part of San Diego he lives in, I guess from what I've heard, I mean, he has a driver, so he's either watching game film or reading through the playbook.
He said that was the only way he would do it. He said that it was the only way he could do it is if he had a driver so he could actually do work, because he said the commute was very long. So he couldn't drive it himself. And he said, so he got a driver so he could watch game film and do his work in the car. I thought that was pretty cool, because to me, I wouldn't want to pack up 8 kids in a house in San Diego and just move it up the road.
No way.
I'd just be like, no, we're just staying right here.
And even though we're talking about professional athletes, the cost of living from San Diego versus L.A. is there. I mean, it's not a huge difference, but there is a difference. L.A. is just a tad bit more expensive than San Diego.
Oh, okay. All right.
Especially where he lives. I know he lives more inland San Diego, so he can afford a bigger house at a lower price, as opposed to if he moved up to Los Angeles or Orange County, he would be paying more of a premium price then.
That's all right. Very good. That's pretty cool. I'm glad he didn't move. I'm glad he was, you know, because, man, when you got kids, you want to keep them in the same school and all that good stuff, keep them with the routine. So he's probably like, look, I'll just hire a driver. I'll do my work in the car. What are they going to do? I'm Philip Rivers, for crying out loud.
Well,
I'll go up there and do his work and get out of here.
Plus, he was never big on the idea of the team moving in the first place.
No, he hated it.
And
the
it was
idea.
Almost
Absolutely.
I think at first it was more of a, I can't think of the word I'm looking for, like, you know, just a protest in a way. It's like, I'm not moving to LA. I'm staying here in San Diego because this team needs to be in San Diego. I'm San Diego. I'm not LA.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I thought he was the biggest vocal guy on that whole deal in terms of not wanting to move. It was, I don't know. That didn't go over well. That wasn't handled good.
No, they messed up royally.
No relocation really is handled well, but that wasn't handled well at all. Look, I always said, look, if you're going to relocate, just do what Baltimore did. Just shut up and then just have the trucks come and then just get the hell out of town. But the way it was dragged out and was blaming on the fans and the voters, the stadium and all that. Like, well, if you want to move, just move.
Yeah, it wasn't just that, but it was also the fact that everyone knew that they're moving to a stadium where it's not their stadium. It's going to be the Rams stadium featuring the Chargers. You know, they're going to have their Chargers are going to be paying rent to use that stadium.
See, that was my biggest thing. And I know I said this before, but I used to get really adamant to people. I didn't care if you're from Southern California or not, because I used to hear this all the time from people. I used to say for years and years and years, I say, you know, there was no reason why there's not a team in Los Angeles, right? For 20 years, there wasn't a team in Los Angeles. And I know I've said that was the main reason why teams got new stadium deals, because it was always the threat of moving to LA. But that excuse that people would use all the time, well, there's so much to do in LA. I'm like, we're not asking for 14 million people to go to a football game. I'm asking for 70,000. There aren't 70,000 people that be willing to go to a football game on 8 Sundays out of the year. Tell me the beach is awesome. It's awesome. Tell me there's great amusement parks and stuff to do. Yes, there's great restaurants. There's movies. I got all that stuff. It's Hollywood. But I'm asking for 70,000 people to go to a football game. Don't give me that it's nice weather. There's nice weather everywhere that has NFL cities. It's nice in Miami and they have a football team. And I used to hate that excuse because it overshadowed the main reason there wasn't a team in LA, which was they wanted to fleece other cities for years for new stadiums. And now they've got 2. So how quickly did that change? I'm glad LA's got a team. I'm not glad LA's got 2 teams, but I'm glad LA at least has a team. 800-777-2907 is the number if you want to join us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's on SB Nation AM.
Now, back to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I'll get back to more some news and notes around the NFL as camp has begun. Andrew Luck is good to go in Indianapolis. What does that mean for the AFC South? Before we do that, Ron, I asked this question yesterday on my personal Facebook page, and I got a bunch of response. Why? What happened? What's the deal with the straws? Why are we banning straws now all of a sudden?
And where was I? Bad for the environment. They kill birds.
Okay, they kill birds. Here's the deal. I can get it and I understand it. People are yelling at me as if this has been known news, and I'm like, I literally had no idea that straws were going to be this kind of crisis.
No, they kill
birds. I woke up and they were outlawing it and going to throw people in jail in California if they use straws.
Well, that's extreme. California likes to take things to the extreme. No, they kill birds. They pollute the oceans because people don't know how to throw away straws.
That's another thing I don't understand. Don't straws end up in the trash in landfills? Why? How are they ending up in the ocean?
You hear that sound?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no clue either.
All right, good.
I mean, I know.
People are telling me there's 500 million straws used every day. I go, that's wrong. In the United States, I go, that's wrong. We have 300 million people. We're not using half a billion straws every day. We're not.
Yeah, because I think that number is a bit embellished.
That's way embellished. I mean, think about it. That means everybody in this country is using like 1.5 straws a day. I go weeks without using a straw. I go weeks without going to a fast food joint or wherever I get a straw and using it. So I go days without not using it. I know a lot of people do the same thing too. That would mean for everyone, every day that I don't use one, somebody's using two or three.
Yeah, now I do know, like, when you go to, especially in Southern California, if you were to go to the zoos in Southern California, they don't distribute straws. Or if you go to any SeaWorld, they don't hand out straws.
Well, except
for the ones with the souvenir cups, because they're big, hard plastic. You're not going to lose them, but they don't have just straws readily available, just because people don't know. People don't know. It's the public's fault.
Yeah, well,
just
here's
the public.
I can see that if you're a SeaWorld or you're a zoo, because you never know what kind of clientele you're going to have. And
well,
somebody's
that,
gonna
you
get
know,
silly
if
with
it
a straw
gets windy, it blows into the tank.
I get that.
And then a fish is chewing on a straw and he's looking, you know, all rough and tough and he's making the other fish feel guilty.
But my issue with this is, again, I mean, I'm not oblivious to news. It's not like I went into a coma and woke up. I mean, but I didn't know. Like, how did this, to use the Spinal Tap term, how did this get to 11 so quickly? I mean, I didn't think there was a problem with straws. And then, again, I wake up one day and they're trying to pass bills to make this illegal and you could go to jail for it.
There didn't
seem to be no graduation into, hey, let's cool it with the straws. It's sort of, well, yeah, if we could just cool it with the straws a little bit, that'd be fine. Okay, if you wouldn't mind just cooling it with the straws. Instead, I went from straws are cool to straws are deadly. And I don't know where the middle went.
Straws are the devil.
Yeah, straws are the devil.
I think
I get it. If it's making a mess of the environment, okay. But
I think it's part that I think where it escalated so quickly was with Starbucks. When Starbucks got behind it and said, you know what, yeah, we're not going to give any straws out anymore. Your iced lattes, you got to drink. You got to get that mustache now when you drink your iced latte. And you want that extra foam, you're not getting it through a straw. And once Starbucks did it, I think that was the catalyst for everyone. Honestly, I'm going to blame millennials.
Yeah, it's got to be millennials. We'll blame them.
It's the go-to people to blame.
It just ruined everything. I don't know. The overall arrogance of people when they were giving me this lecture, I was like, give me a break. I said, 6 months ago you weren't talking about this. Stop pretending like you've been on this cause forever and a day. Look, we've had straws since they were whenever they were invented 100 years ago, whenever. Listen, if straws are a problem today, it was a problem 20 years ago. Why is it a problem today? Because somebody found a video of a sea turtle with it up its nose? Now all of a sudden it's a major problem? I get it. If it's hurting the environment, it's hurting the environment. But don't act like this is something we should have known all along. Some people like me are like, I don't know why straws are bad. It's like now I can't keep up with everything. I can't keep up with everything that's bad for the environment, or don't do this or don't do that, or be careful with this and don't use this much sunscreen. I can't keep up with it all. I want to use a straw. What if you're disabled and you need a straw? Can you still get one? I mean, that's a serious question.
Nope. If you're disabled, you just got to
bring your own.
You just got to wear it.
My cousin's wife said to me on Facebook, she says, we use metal straws. Like, for what? You just carry them around with you? So you go to like fast food joints, you just use your own metal straw? All right, I guess. Well, good for them. I mean, that sounds cool, but I mean, metal straws. Doesn't that affect the flavor of stuff? Get a little bit of that metal taste.
I would imagine.
In your Coke.
I mean, you know, are they rust-free metal straws?
Yeah, I was going to say the reason that maybe I should ask her that. Or do you think that's too smart, Alecky? I don't want to disrespect my cousin's wife.
No, I mean, you could ask about metal straws. Like, what's the difference between a metal straw? I mean,
she says we use metal straws. Oh, she's right. Well, don't they rust?
Yeah. What about when it hits your teeth? I mean, because honestly,
that's a good point.
You don't get to the straw perfectly every single time. There are times where you know it might jab you in the lip or hit your teeth.
All right, I'm gonna write that.
And with the soft plastic ones, you're fine. Yeah, it's like, oh, that's annoying. With
do they
metal,
hurt your
dude,
teeth
you
when
start,
you miss?
You're gonna start looking like Ovechkin with the metal straw.
Exactly. You can knock your teeth out with a metal straw. But you got to wash those things, and then, you know, oh, God.
And are they going to ban the crazy straws? I mean, are we ruining
remember
childhood
the crazy
now?
Straws? I wanted a crazy straw now, so bad. My mother never bought them for me. Those crazy straws were on TV. It looked like the kids were having so much fun drinking juice.
Now they have ones where you buy, like, a kit, and you can build. It's like a Lego straw where you have different edges and points, and you bring it all over the place.
How long does that business stay in before they shut that thing
down? Probably forever. It's one of those stupid businesses that, you know, it's like, oh man, that would have been so easy to do, and they just stay in business forever because there's
surprised
it's
there's
like a
protests
novelty.
Outside.
Oh, there's going to be protests because they're making
quit the crazy straws. They're killing the dolphins. Oh man, I really honestly. I had no idea about this. In all truthfulness, this is not hyperbole. I honestly did not know. I did not know a thing about this.
I had heard about it. I didn't know they were actually were banned. I guess San Francisco is joining such places as Malibu, San Luis Obispo, and it's all California. California ruins everything.
Yeah, I mean, is it hope that it'll trickle down and eventually people in like Nebraska won't be able to use straws? This is my problem. I'm still trying to figure out how all of the 500 million straws per day that they are claiming, how some of them get into the ocean. Because every time I've had a fast, like I've never once said, like if I go to a fast food restaurant and I grab food, let's say I get it to go. I never once say, well, this burger wrapper and this French fry container and this cup are going in the trash, but this straw, whoop, right down the sewer drain. Like I've never done that. I just put it in the trash with everything else. And I'm assuming that that trash then goes to a landfill. And sure, it takes a long time to decompose, but I don't know how the straws are getting. And again, I'm not saying so many, we're not talking about a few straws. They're making such a big deal about this because they're saying the ocean is covered in straws. You can't even swim in the ocean anymore. You're just going to run into straws. Dolphins are just sucking them into the blowhole, and they're dying by the millions because straws are just covering the ocean top. And I'm wondering how the heck they're all the straws are getting there.
I think the ban will be for real. I'll tell you this. When I came to Texas, I was really, really surprised that Styrofoam was still in use.
Oh, I know. That's another one, right? Yes.
And you won't be. You can't not take Styrofoam out of Texas. They live and breathe for this Styrofoam.
Never going to happen.
They need it for all stuff. I know people who save Styrofoam cups.
Yeah. And Styrofoam, those boxes of barbecue tastes better in a Styrofoam box.
Exactly. And in California, you can't even buy Styrofoam. You can't even pay. The only way you can get Styrofoam in California is on the black market. That's the only way to get Styrofoam. You have to know someone, go to a seedy area, slip them a 20 and say, man, let me get some Styrofoam from you.
Get some Styrofoam. So what's the to-go? It's paper. Is it paper cups? Or is there a fancy? Is there a hemp cup or something that they created?
Probably. Yeah.
That they use?
California's on the forefront of hemp product. No, I mean, not only that, but I
might take off, actually.
You can't. I don't think I might be wrong about this, but also in California, you cannot buy plastic, or you can't get plastic bags anymore when you're checking out of the grocery store.
Paper bags?
Yeah, paper bag only.
All right.
Back in the day, they used to say paper or plastic. In California, it's just assumed paper, or you bring your own, and everyone's bringing their own.
What if you're a tourist and you go to California, like, do you have plastic bags? And do they look at you odd, or do they just go, no, here in California, we prefer paper bags? Or do they go, get out of our state?
Pretty
you
much.
Heathen. You no, monster. I mean,
if you're a tourist and you go to California, one of the things that's probably going to happen to you, it's going to be the wake-up call, is that you're going to go to a fast food restaurant, your food will be in a paper bag, will not have styrofoam in it, and you have to bring your own straw.
Yeah, that's true. You got to bring your own straw.
You got to bring your own straw. And that's a shame because McDonald's has like the best straws ever.
They're great.
You know,
they're great. They got those colors and they're great.
Yeah.
They're big enough.
Big enough that, you know, you can drink a whole large drink in one sip.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And they're killing that. They're killing the dream.
The last time I went to California was a family. My sister lives out in Los Angeles. We did a family reunion. This was a number of years ago. And my wife and I had lived in Las Vegas. So when we landed and we had the kids, my sister said, oh, we got the rent a car. My sister gave us her address. So we put it in the GPS unit. And I said, wait, now I haven't seen my sister in a long time, Ron. So I just want to make this clear. I hadn't seen my sister in a long time. My family was all gathering for a big family reunion. We had flown in. I think we were one of the last people to fly in. And before I went to my sister's house, the first place I went to was In-N-Out Burger. That was the first place I went.
Because you're a smart man.
Because I'm a smart man. I mean, my sister could wait, but In-N-Out could not. I just darted for the nearest one. I didn't care where it was. It could have been the worst part of town. I didn't care. I was like, get me that. I hadn't had one in forever. I used to have them in Vegas. I needed that. That was the first thing I did. Then I went to my sister's. And I told my sister that. I said, I want to apologize. We went to In-N-Out before we came to see you. And she said, I completely understand.
No, it's everyone understands.
And I said, thank you. I said,
there's no shame in that.
I know.
There's no shame in that at all. I mean, if you land at LAX, I could tell you that when you get out, when you just get out of the airport and you hit the first major intersection, I can't remember what the street is, you make a left.
That might have been where I went because I just plugged it into the GPS.
Yeah,
take
think,
me there.
I think it's on Sepulveda Boulevard. You know, you make a left on Sepulveda right when you get out of the airport. It's about half a mile down the road right on the left-hand side.
I'm just
guessing. It's not that I've ever been to that In-N-Out when I go back to Southern California. And, you know, I'm not 100% sure if that's the exact location. I believe the address. And I'm just kidding.
That's great stuff. Great, great stuff. Can't wait to go back. That's what I'll do it again. If I go back, I'll do it again. All right. 800-777-2907. You want to join in the conversation. If you have an idea on what we should do about the straw issue, we'll talk some more NFL as training camps begin on SB Nation AM.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Glad you could be with us on SB Nation AM. So Ron, we have a nice little rejoiner on our network that's Jim Kelly brought, you know, kind of promoting our network. And it is good to know that Jim Kelly went to the doctors and there was no evidence of oral cancer. On Wednesday, his wife, Jill, making the announcement on social media. Man, there's a lot of people pulling for Jim Kelly. Jim Kelly's one of the more likable people that we've ever seen in sports. And I'm glad this news happened because it had returned. He beat it, then it returned again. I mean, it's been an ordeal for the Kelly family, but I'm glad this bit of news. He was also the Jimmy V Award recipient at the ESPYs just about, what, a week ago? So.
Yeah. No, and I think this is, I mean, he would take this news over any of the four Super Bowl losses.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I got to a point where I didn't care for the Bills. When, you know, I was a Steeler fan, they used to beat the Steelers in the playoffs. So I never cared for the Bills. So I never concerned myself with them losing Super Bowls. But after like the second one, I was like, okay. And then when they got to the third one, I was actually pulling for them. And then the fourth one, that last one against the Cowboys, Super Bowl 28. In Atlanta, I was really pulling for him. I wanted them to win so bad because Marv Levy seemed like a good guy. Jim Kelly seemed like a good guy. You just knew the fan base was excellent. I mean, the fan base is so loyal. It's crazy. And then they didn't win any of those four Super Bowls. They gave Scott Norwood a standing ovation or a huge ovation. Shouldn't say standing because they were all standing. It was a rally in Buffalo. When they got back after their first Super Bowl loss, they warmly embraced Scott Norwood. I've never seen a fan base do that so quickly to a guy that cost them a game. And that they knew that kick was tough. It was 47 yards. The turf was terrible. It was kind of off center. It's for the Super Bowl. There's a lot of factors that went into Norwood. I mean, people remember it as if he missed some sort of 20-yard chip shot. He didn't miss a 20-yard chip shot. He missed a 47-yard field goal in the last play of the game on a really crappy field in Tampa. Really crappy field. And the Bills fans embraced Norwood. So I always knew the Bills fans were good people. They really embraced their team. They loved that football team. And so by the time we got to the third Super Bowl I was pulling for him, and in the fourth, I was begging to the football gods that the Bills would win that one. And that's Super Bowl 28. Thurman Thomas like left his helmet on the bench. He couldn't find it. It was so bizarre. And it was so different than the last game they played with the Cowboys, because they played in the first Super Bowl, Super Bowl 27, they turned the ball over 9 times. And then in Super Bowl 28, it was just Emmitt Smith, a diet of Emmitt Smith just down their throat. And they still couldn't overcome those Super Bowl losses. It was really tough.
But I like how time has kind of healed the wound, because now we don't look at them so much as losers.
Yeah, right.
But the fact, like, God, I can't believe they went to 4 straight.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I don't think you'll see that. I mean, it really was remarkable. It was an incredible run. Denver went to 3 in 4 years, and then right after that, the Bills went to 4 in a row. So there was a real large segment of time where the AFC was dominated by John Elway and Jim Kelly. 800-777-2907. It's Tony D, Ron Culver, SB Nation AM.